Fourth case for argument this morning, United States v. O'Halloran, appeal number 07-1559. Mr. Durkin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Bernie O'Halloran is a drug addict, pure and simple, somewhat incorrigible drug addict. I think the record shows every one of his offenses is drug related. Certainly the supervised release violation is totally drug related. Bernie O'Halloran also happens to be, his father happens to be the best friend of my 86-year-old father, which is how I got involved in this case. I did not try his original case, but this has been a kind of a work of mercy for some time, and I'm sorry to trouble you with what may seem like a relatively minor case, but I think the issues here are a little more significant than just the O'Halloran case, because what I think needs to be brought to your attention, and I was pleased to see the panel today because all of you have so much district court experience, you might be surprised to learn now from the days you were there that there's now a third advocate in the courtroom. And that's the probation department.
That's nothing new.
I think it is new. It's certainly new to me. The advocacy part of it is. I happened to be in a courtroom yesterday listening to a probation officer argue, which is happening more and more.
And arguing with the court?
Arguing as if they were lawyers. I mean,
well, they're always defending their pre-sentence reports against objections.
Quietly, though.
What I'm suggesting is that they are now no longer, in my view, simply an arm of the court. They are becoming advocates, and this case is a classic example of it. The government agreed to the proposal that he be given a chance to pay for his own inpatient drug treatment. We went to court. We never once even admitted the violations. If you look at the record here, there was not only did O'Halloran, our position most succinctly is not only did O'Halloran himself have a right to allocution, no one, including me or Mr. Hill, had any opportunity to address the length of the sentence. If you read the record, it's simply a variety of status hearings in which we were proposing an alternative. The government finally agreed to that in February. The probation department still maintained its position. You'll notice that the judge left.
You're disagreeing with both you and the government.
Yes, and that's okay. I don't have any quarrel with that, other than I found it odd. But what bothers me about this, and I think should bother you, is that when it came time, at the last hearing, before the, I think it's the 14th, and the sentencing's on the 20th, I thought the judge was going to get off the bench and just come back and tell us what he was going to do. He says, I need a couple days to figure out how we're going to proceed here. So, and I'm thinking, well, we're just going to come back, and the judge is either going to tell us he's going to agree, or he's going to say, I disagree. Instead, he comes out, and you read the transcript of the sentencing, there's no hearing whatsoever. He simply reads an opinion into the record, and then says, anything further? And I'm sitting there dumbfounded, going, and the government says somehow we waive this, or, you know, this should be a plain error review because I didn't object. I did object to the consecutive nature of it. But frankly, I don't know what to do, and there is a case we cite there that I think says I don't know what a lawyer is supposed to do in that situation. I guess I should have started.
That is, he has already pronounced sentence.
He's already pronounced sentence, and not only has he only already pronounced it, he's never even asked anybody for what their opinion is as to the length of the sentence. The two advocates in the courtroom, the government and the defendant, have agreed. Their lawyers have agreed that this should be the alternative: no jail. This third advocate is recommending a consecutive sentence. The guidelines here call, and this is the other thing that amazes me. Now, if you flip this around, imagine what the government would be yelling about if all of a sudden he'd come out and said, no, I'm going to let him walk out the door. Give him nothing. The guidelines say 8 to 14 months, but no, I've decided that he ought to just walk out the door. The government would be up here banging on the table saying, wait a minute, The guideline said 8 to 14 months. 8 to 14 months is a reasonably presumptive sentence.
So your point is that he should have said, I'm going to reject the agreement, and now I want to hear from both sides.
Absolutely.
As to what the amount should be.
Absolutely.
That is, the right of allocation is not waived any place along the line.
Nowhere. And in fact, if you look at the record, and I think what supports me in this is on the 14th, we never got around to admitting the allegations until the government agreed. That was part of what had gone on the whole time. We never had a hearing or on whether or not these were violations until there was an agreement. And I went ahead and admitted them because we had an agreement. Now, I'm not saying I would. I said at one point I might have admitted them anyway. But nevertheless, we never had a chance to argue the sentence here. And the sentence got doubled from the guidelines. I just don't understand how that can possibly be.
If this case were to be sent back, would it be your view that it should be sent to somebody else?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Under rule, I think it's rule 36. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if there aren't any other questions, I'd rather reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Kohler.
Mr. Kohler, I think I understand your legal position, but I would like to know whether you have any quarrel with what Mr. Durkin described as the scenario that led to this.
Good morning, Your Honor. Yes, I do.
What's the quarrel?
There are several quarrels with what Mr. Durkin had to say. First of all, there were a series of hearings in this case.
Yes.
And if the court looks at the record in this case, and we've cited to the various hearings, some of them were status hearings, some of them were a little bit more significant than that.
Well, at the time of the rejection of the agreement, there was an agreement, I take it.
There was no agreement, Your Honor. Basically, the government took a position, and clearly our position is set out in the record what our position was, but we had no agreement or deal with the defendant. And I disagree.
So what was your view on this 8 to 14 months? What was your position? If there was no agreement, what was your position?
Well, there was no objection on anybody's part, Your Honor, to the 8 to 14-month range.
So
that wasn't the question.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying that then is a position, to say there's no rejection of the 8 to 14. In other words, you didn't affirmatively say, no, it should be more than 14, but you didn't object to the 8 to 14 months. So then that was an implicit.
Actually, Judge, I did, on the record, detail what the government's position was in terms of sentencing. In fact, this took place, I believe, the hearing.
What did you say?
And what
well,
is it?
Well, Judge, basically what I said is, along the lines that Mr. Durkin just alluded to, that although we viewed it extremely seriously, as the probation department did, we essentially thought that Mr. O'Halloran should get one last chance, that he should have the impatience.
Well, then you don't quarrel with what he said.
Well, no, but there was no agreement, Judge.
That's as close to an agreement as I can hear.
Well, but there's...
We agree with him that he ought to walk.
Well, it wasn't a question of walking, Your Honor.
But not go to jail.
There was another component.
Listen,
that
it's all right to do it.
No, Judge, basically what we said, there was another component to it, that it was an inpatient program. He was to be inpatient, and then he was supposed to spend another 6 months in work release with the Salvation Army. But that was our position. But there was no agreement, and his admission to these violations had nothing to do with an agreement with the government.
Having taken that position, and when the court rejected it, did he reject it and then give you a chance to talk more, or give you the other guy a chance to talk?
Well, I think what the record shows, Your Honor,
is yes or no. Come on, it's an easy one.
Well,
you were there.
I don't think it's quite
when
that easy. I was there, Your Honor.
Wait. Yes. When he came out and said, I don't agree, did he now give you a chance to discuss it or talk about it?
At that point in time when the judge came back, after he had laid out
I just asked. You know, I don't do this often. I just want you to say, was there an opportunity when he came out and said, I'm not going to follow that, I'm not going to do what the government and the defendant said they ought to do, was there an opportunity given for you to talk or for Mr. Durkin or the defendant to talk?
Frankly, Judge, at that point in time, the judge
went forward.
Jesus,
Murphy, can you say yes or no?
So the answer is No. Right?
Well, no, in the sense, Judge, that the judge was going on with his explanation.
Didn't.
But we could have objected. Someone could have objected at that point in time.
I understand that. But did he say, this is the sentence, before you had a chance to say anything?
Without objecting to what the court was saying, yes. Without breaking into what the court was saying at that point in time on that last day, yes, Judge.
That's so he came out, he said, I'm rejecting it, and here's my sentence. He did not ask you for your opinion. He did not ask the government after he had said, I'm rejecting what the treatment and the six-month deal. He did not say, what do you have to say? What does the defendant have to say? What does defense counsel have to say?
No, Your Honor.
Right. He just rolled straight into the sentence. That's all he wanted to know.
To put it in context, Your Honor, in the hearing before that Mr. Durkin spoke about, the judge also lays out in the record what everyone's position is. He goes, and this is probation's position. The 28 months, and this is the government's position, and this is the defendant's position, and counsel's
when
right.
When you get around to the sentence, that's a different point thing altogether. After you've rejected, you know everybody's position, then you get a chance to talk about, I'm not going to do it, I'm going to sentence them. Now you get to talk about sentencing. Mm-hmm. That's what allocution is for.
And Judge, just so that it's clear, we're not up here saying that we don't think that the better practice is for...
Oh, I'm not discussing it, right? I'm talking about the law.
Mr. Durkin's position, when what's a lawyer supposed to do?
Well, I think what a lawyer's supposed to do, Your Honor, is object. Lawyers do it every day, in everyday practice.
After
if there's a problem, you object.
After the sentence has been imposed, he now is in a position to stand up and say, wait a minute, Judge, where the hell are you going?
Well, he did, Judge. He objected to the consecutive nature of the sentence, and he made some other comments after that. And it was after that, Judge, that Judge Lindbergh said, anybody else? So anyone else, the probation officer, the defendant, myself, we
Is
could have made additional comments.
Is this before sentencing or after sentencing?
This was after sentencing, after. Judge.
Gee, anybody want to say goodbye? Does anybody want to go down the way, bring a toothbrush to them? You know,
Judge, in fairness,
you don't have to defend every position in the history of the world, and I understand your position. I sympathize with it. But, I mean, all I asked originally was to be candid. I didn't ask you to acquiesce in my brilliant ideas. When I ask you what happened, tell me what happened.
And I'm trying to answer you directly, Judge, but I think it all has to be taken into context.
You weren't not. That's what you want to take it into context. You want to paint a bigger picture in the back. Some questions are capable of a yes or no answer, and that's all I ask for.
I apologize, Judge.
That's all. You're forgiven.
Thank you.
Your advocacy, however, should not extend that far.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Judge. Your Honor, I think in terms of the, I think it's important, though, however, to view this in the total context, the fairness of this hearing, the total context, and the series of the hearings that were had. I also think that the court, to the extent that anyone would like me to address it, there is that recent Lupke decision. I think that this case is distinguishable from Lupke in the fact that, first of all, that was an original sentencing situation. We have a revocation sentencing.
We have already said that your right of allocution tax attaches also when you're being sentenced after a revocation.
There's a difference, though, Your Honor. The rule, which was promulgated in 2005 at Rule 32.1, is different from the rule that's at Rule 32. At Rule 32, it puts the onus, the obligation on the court to essentially ask the defendant whether or not he or she wants to allocute. If you look carefully at the Rule 32.1, the language essentially, Judge, is the person is entitled to an opportunity to make a statement and present any information in mitigation. Nowhere in that rule is there a suggestion that it's the court's obligation, as there is clearly on the original sentence.
So when someone in the original sentence where he got probation, right, because he was out, this was a revocation, right?
This was a supervised release. The original sentencing, he got jail time.
Right, the original sentence, but now he's out on supervised release. So it doesn't matter then that he faces this jail time in the revocation? It doesn't. So the court doesn't have any obligation. I mean, that's what you're really saying.
Well, I don't think
because you're still facing time.
Well, once again, we're not saying the better practice isn't for the court to do that.
What I think you said, and let me take it, that there's no affirmative obligation for him to get up and say, "No, do you want?" If you've got something you want to say, Now, I may disagree with that, but that's about what you said.
That's what the rule clearly implies.
Yeah, all right. Assuming the rule says that, in this case, there wasn't even a shot at it if he's already pronounced sentence before you get to that point. I'm going to sentence you to this figure now. Is there something you want to say? At that stage of the game, it's all gone.
Well,
talk me out of it is what you want him to say.
Essentially, though, Judge, there were opportunities before that. We had, as I said, that last, once again, I think this has to be viewed in the series.
There were no opportunities until they found out for the first time that the court had rejected what was apparently an agreement between the parties that this is what should happen.
Well, once again, there was no agreement. There were different positions.
I understand
positions.
No written agreement, but you said you went along with that.
No, what I said was we had our position, they had their position.
Yeah,
our positions
position
were consistent.
It looked like your position was that something within that range was
they were consistent, Your Honor. But also probation's position was 28 months, so that was always on the table as a possibility.
Yeah,
in fact, counsel had talked about it at an earlier time that maybe a 28-month sentence was appropriate in this case. If you look at the record, he says it right on the record. The rule, Judge, one other thing very briefly, if you look at that rule, 32.1, if you look just a paragraph below it, it also gives the right of elocution, entitles the person on a modification of a supervised release or probation. So that's extended down there, but it's the same type of rule. It doesn't put the obligation under the wording of the rule on the court to invite the elocution, but it gives the person the right to do that. So that means even in the smaller cases, the adjustment for restitution and other things, the right of elocution is there. It's just the judge is not obliged to, and therefore not subject to.
Yeah, I understood your point, but my point is the rationale for the rule. The rationale for the rule is the same whether you're facing your initial sentence or you're facing a revocation. In terms of the court giving an individual an opportunity to speak. I'm just saying the rationale is the same. I understand your argument that it.
Yeah, and there's no question, Judge, that we're not disagreeing.
Your view is the court doesn't have any obligation, but I'm just saying the rationale should be the same, whether it's for the original sentence or whether it's for a later sentence.
The fact that the government takes a position defending the actions of the trial court warms the cockles of my heart, whether I agree with it or disagree with it. But don't overdo it.
Just from a legal standpoint, setting aside how I answered the questions, and I tried to answer them forthrightly, basically, Judge, from our view, this is a question of whether or not there was reversible plain error, and there wasn't on this record, and we'd ask the court to affirm the sentence. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
This case will be taken under advisement.
Does she have any time?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it sounded like you were ahead, so maybe you wanted to quit.
Peace.
That's a good idea.